a shot, runs into the box, shot, score!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer. At Firehouse Subs, enjoy more subs, save more lives.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9, The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. Welcome to our weekly show. We talk soccer in Atlanta, in Georgia, in the Southeast, in the United States, in this hemisphere, in this planet, all over. And we're going to cover a lot of that on tonight's show, but we're going to be heavily focused on Atlanta, Atlanta United, what has happened, what is coming in terms of the roster, and what is coming in terms of this next competition that Atlanta United will be participating in, the League's Cup. We'll get you set for that tournament coming up in the next segment. And as you guys always know, the 3-4-3 will close it out. We'll talk about the MLS All-Star Skills Challenge, which was a lot of fun this evening. Hopefully you had a chance to watch some of that. Hopefully that's something that the league can really start to, I think, expand and make even bigger. We've seen this with the NBA All-Star Weekend, for example, and in many All-Star Weekends on the NBA side, the Saturday night has been more memorable than the actual game itself. I think MLS has that kind of opportunity to look at those sorts of things with their skills challenge and really broaden it out. It was cool this year to see legends participating in it. It was cool to see players from the NWSL and Liga MX Femenil participate in it. I think you can take this to a whole nother level. And it's going to be really exciting to see the league, hopefully, start to think about how they can make this an even bigger event. Look, it's an all-star game, and it's all-star week in MLS. A little bit of a break between the regular season and the League's Cup, which will start on Friday. Atlanta United and DC United will kick that off, the first match in the tournament. All-star games are what they are. You know, I've grown up with them. I think internationally, people look at an all-star game really confusedly. Like, what is this? This isn't something we're used to. I think they're fun for what they are. I do like the format of this, and I've said it before on the station when I've talked to various folks. The setup of the MLS All-Star game that they're currently using, where it's the MLS All-Stars against the Liga MX All-Stars, that is the best format for an All-Star game if you want to get something resembling a competitive match. You're not going to get that in an East-West or captain versus captain kind of game. Those can be pure fun and a lot of entertaining things, but you're not going to see a gritty kind of match. You're not going to see, I think, a game with a little bit of edge to it. You can see that in this with the best of MLS and the best of Liga MX. Now, players are going to be very heavily restricted on minutes. So it's, you know, you're going to have to balance that if you're these two coaches. But there's a lot of league pride on the line. So I do like the format. I wouldn't hate it if you decide not to stick with this and you decide to go into a different situation where you're not going to have the Liga MX side of it. Although I hope they continue it. If you don't do that, I just really hope that you never go back to the MLS All-Stars playing a major European or South American club. There's no benefit to that because your team is not a team. It's a group of players, a group of very good players, but it's not a team. And you're playing a team, even if they're in preseason, you're playing a group that's been constructed with balance and they're built to be a team. You're always going to go into that with a huge competitive disadvantage. And you're just setting yourself up for Euro snobs and others to make comments, and you're just not going to give the spectacle that you're looking for. If you don't do the MLS Liga MX match, then you need to do some variation of East-West or having the leading two, you know, whether if it's the goal scorers, the leading two vote getters and all-star voting as captains, and they pick their teams. I think that could be a lot of fun. We haven't seen that in the soccer world at this kind of a level. So that would be very, very cool. But it's All-Star Week. The game's actually tomorrow. The skills competition was tonight. It was a very fun experience to watch it. Something that, I'd love to see grow. What got us to the All-Star break in the Atlanta United universe? A four-point week at home against two teams that are ahead of you in the table. And this week had a very different feel after Wednesday, which was a disappointing night. When you really get back to it, and you really look at the overall performance, the performance is very different than the result. And this is, look, it's hard to quantify, and I get it. I understand it. I didn't feel great coming out of that game on Wednesday. But when you're looking at the big picture, and I think this is something that Rob Valentino does a very, very good job of, and I think it showed in the performance on Saturday, especially after a mistake led to a goal. You go back through these two games against NYC and against the team that I think has been the best in Major League Soccer over the last 18 months and maybe the best 18-month span in MLS history, Columbus. They have been that good. They've been very good as of late, although they did come in after a draw against Charlotte in the midweek. Maybe the midweek game's catching up to them a little bit. Maybe that CONCACAF run catching up to them a little bit. They went on a great run after the CONCACAF final that they lost in Pachuca. But Atlanta plays both of these teams, gives up three goals in two games, two of them from misplaced passes, mistakes with the ball, just not that common. And the other, a very questionable penalty that I thoroughly disagreed with on Wednesday night. I think it's even hard to justify. Even looking back at it now, I don't think the motion from Tylus Magno to go to the ground matches the contact that happened between him and Brooks Lennon. I think it was extremely exaggerated. And these are the kinds of penalties that I really want to see taken out of the game. I think we've had this conversation in some other leagues where they're not giving the softer penalties anymore. And I think where the attacking player accentuates or adds to the amount of force that was in the challenge, that penalty shouldn't be given. And if you ever wonder why players throw themselves to the ground inside the 18, this is why, because it can change a game and change a result. And it did in this case. Don't like the call. But the other two goals are the ones that stand out that we can really dissect. I mean, referees are going to make calls that you like and you don't like. Don't like that it decided this game at all. However, the two mistakes, the Bartosz Szlich mistake and the one on Saturday where it's a very difficult ball and Tristan Muyamba and Sean De Silva unable to deal with it. It's turned over and Columbus punishes you. Those are not common errors, but that's really it in what you gave up in these two games. You played two very good teams to really not giving them a whole lot in the game, and you got four goals in these two games. And yeah, two of them are from set pieces, which you hadn't been able to find any goals from set pieces all year. Stian Gregersen, Saba Lobjanica said his name, and Stian appeared inside the 18. Two forceful headers to win the match on Saturday. And you got two goals in the first half, a really good start against NYC on the Wednesday. So I think it's very easy, and everybody fell into it, me included. Everybody fell into it after the result on Wednesday that the performance was bad. So the result had to match that, right? In this case, it wasn't the performance that was the bad part. The result was bad. The mistakes, issue. Yes, you don't want to make those. But the performance was not as bad as it was made out to be. And Saturday was a very strong performance, and I think a mentally strong performance after a disappointing Wednesday and falling behind on Saturday. And they come back and find a way. It was impressive, and I think it's something that credit needs to be given. All of the talk loudly about how things were after Wednesday, I didn't hear the same after the win on Saturday. It was almost backhanded compliments after the win on Saturday. Not really fair to this group. Not fair to Rob Valentino. Not fair to his staff. I think they put in a ton of work. And we've talked about set pieces, and you saw it in the early goal on Wednesday. Liam Curran is someone who's heavily involved in set pieces, the goalkeeper coach who's taken on some additional responsibilities. It's a full staff, and they work on all these things together, but Liam Curran has kind of jumped to the fore when it comes to set pieces, and you have to give him his flowers after Saturday night, where it's not just because Stian Gregersen's a big guy and Sabo Lobjanidze put it into a good spot. It was things like Stian told you on the full-time report when Mike Conti and I had a chance to talk to him. Things like creating a block in front so he could get a cleaner header. Jay Fortune playing his role in those moments and creating a little extra space for Stian Gregersen. Very, very thorough in the amount of work that they put in these situations. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight. I'm Jason Longshore, recapping the week that was for Atlanta United. And I want to share a couple clips from our pregame show on Saturday. If you guys don't know, Garth Lagerwey joins us almost every match to talk about whatever's going on, whether it's Atlanta United, whether it's soccer around the world. And he dropped a couple bits of knowledge that I want to share with you. I'm going to start with the longer clip. This was a follow-up to the question that I asked after we kind of got through the rules changes that were announced last week. I asked about the ability to construct different kinds of rosters and what that looks like. Garth went into some detail about the Caleb Wiley transfer that was officially announced yesterday and what that can ultimately do for this Atlanta United roster. This is Garth Lagerwey from Five Stripes Countdown on Saturday, talking to myself and Mike Conti.
You know what? That this is one of the things, right, with the Wiley sale that became much more attractive to us when the amount of GAM we could take for that went up, because that's what potentially allows us now to look at Sleash next year. We cannot do it with Gregersen this year because we still have Sleash's payment coming next year. This is the staggering of the contracts.
Yeah.
And I know we're deep in the weeds now.
No, this is great.
Sabo was a DP because we front-loaded the acquisition cost last year. And Gregersen was a DP this year because we front-loaded the acquisition cost this year. And then we pushed Sleash's back, so his hits next year.
Okay.
But if you have the Wiley sale and you take all that GAM, now you can use it to offset the Sleash acquisition, which then frees up a DP spot. So the fun part now, if you look at now trying to rebuild the team, and we say, hey, we have three spots. Now, we only have, before people freak out, like,
right,
we have two spots this summer.
In this window.
On this window, we have Almada and we have Giacomakis' spots that we can use to replace. But we have the potential now to create a third one next year. And so now you look at these signings again and you say, how do we build the best possible team long term? And so this allows you now more flexibility to say, hey, you know, maybe we get a 9 and a 10, but maybe we go get a winger. Or maybe we go, you know, because that's, we can go get best player available, knowing that we can fill that
third,
whatever that remaining third spot is.
Yeah.
You can add that in the winter. Now, fewer players in the winter. And again, maybe that's one where you say, hey, we're not going to sign anybody in the winter. We're going to wait till next summer again to do it. But at any rate.
No, it makes total sense.
Because I know when people said, hey, you know, I had said publicly, hey, it's going to take us 2 to 3 windows to really be from here now to really get set. That's what I mean. We got to get these three DP slots right.
Mm-hmm.
If we do it, I think that'll have a profound impact on our team based on what we've done in the previous two windows, meaning we've started to stack what I would call reliable foundational players, meaning the Sleash, the Saba, the Mayumba, the Zonde, the guys that are, you know, the Brooks Lennon, the guys that are here that could potentially be here, be veteran players that are prime age between 24 and 29. So we're going to stop some of the turning the roster over every 18 months or every 2 years.
Garth Lagerwey just giving you the roadmap right there on the Five Stripes Countdown before the match on Saturday. Make sure you're subscribed to Off the Woodwork. You'll get all of those interviews. They'll get posted probably right around game time, right after the interview happens. But always try to tune in about a half hour before the game on 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. Mike Conti and I get a chance to catch up with Garth Lagerwey. If it's not Garth, it's usually Carlos Bocanegra. We've talked to Jonathan Spector as well. it's huge insight into how this team is functioning and what the thinking is. You just heard how the acquisitions were structured with Steon Gregerson, with Sabo Lobjanidze, with Bartosz Lisz to allow maximum roster construction. And now with the Caleb Wiley transfer and getting up to $3 million in general allocation money, essentially cap space, what that can do for the team with adding another designated player in January to offset the acquisition cost for Sleash that you backloaded to be able to rotate the designated player spots to, again, maximize this roster. That was your roadmap. Hopefully you enjoy those conversations. We're going to continue to dive deeper into different aspects of the club with Garth Lagerwey and others over the next few pregame shows. But coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight, we're going to get ready for the League's Cup. What will Atlanta United have to do to escape the group? Which of the groups look the toughest? All that and more as AST returns in 5 minutes on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
When it comes to the world of soccer, we've got you covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore, and we've talked a lot of Atlanta United in the first segment. We're going to continue that into the second segment, but also look at this new competition that everyone in Major League Soccer and Liga MX will be participating in over the next month or so, the League's Cup. Atlanta United drawn into Group East 7 alongside DC United and Santos Laguna of Mexico. DC United on Friday night. Kickoff is going to be just after 8 o'clock, so a little bit later than you might be used to. Pre-game coverage will start at 7 here on 92.9 The Game, the Odyssey app, and you'll be able to hear Garth Lagerwey right about 7:30, a little bit before that. So if you need to set a reminder on your phone, go ahead and do it now. And we'll catch up about the Caleb Wiley transfer. We'll catch up about maybe if there's any news between now and then about potential incoming signings, because you know they are being talked about out there in the world. Alexi Maranchuk of Atalanta has been linked by multiple sources to Atlanta United. Sounds like a deal is at least in discussions. I don't know if imminent is maybe the right word, but it seemed that way, although it's gotten a little bit quiet over the past few days. But as Garth Lagerwey told you, yeah, they're looking for a 9 and a 10 because you're looking to replace Giakoumakis and Almada. However, with knowing that you're getting an additional designated player spot, or at least have the ability to do that, starting in January, that could change the order of acquisitions if you decide there's another spot in the roster that you'd like to upgrade, and that player might be available now as opposed to later. So it could be very, very interesting. Any updates that happen between now and Friday night, we will talk to Garth Lagerwey about them on the Five Stripes Countdown. But let's get into the soccer side of it. Atlanta and DC on Friday night. Atlanta won in DC, DC won in Atlanta. So this is going to be game three between these two teams in a kind of short period of time, which is going to be a little interesting. It will be the first time going up against DC that you have Steon Gregerson to deal with Christian Benteke. Christian Benteke is the best player in Major League Soccer history over the course of a season in aerial duels. He's such a gigantic factor in how DC plays, whether it is getting on the end of crosses or not really trying to build up out of the back and bombing it long and hoping that he knocks it down to someone that is wearing the same color shirt as him. And he's usually pretty good at that. He caused Atlanta a ton of problems in the game at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Can Steon Gregerson affect that? Can he make that different? Will be very interesting to see. The other good thing about it in terms of the scheduling is Atlanta United did not have any players who made the MLS All-Star team, and they were not upset about that in any way. I'm sure a few individuals would have liked to have been part of it, but Atlanta United, since Saturday's game, has been able to rest, not have a game 3 days later, which is kind of nice, and not have anybody go away right now. So they've been able to rest and work. Christian Benteke will be at the MLS All-Star Game tomorrow. He was doing media tonight, hanging out with friend of the show Kevin Egan and Mo Adu and Jillian Sakovitz tonight in Columbus. Okay, he's going to play tomorrow. I would have no problem if Wilfried Nancy wants to play him the whole 90. He won't, because he's got about 27 forwards on the roster, so that won't be possible. But he can play Christian Benteke as long as he wants to tomorrow, just so the MLS All-Star Game is done justice by Christian Benteke's abilities. Probably not. He'll probably play about 30 minutes. But it's disruptive to what DC wants to do, although they kind of know by this point, and it's not something you're really going to overly practice in terms of playing long and looking for the knockdowns. Little tweaks about how you want the runners to run off, how you think the pressure is going to come from the opponent, things like that, that you're not going to be able to really do much about in this case, because Benteke is gone with the MLS All-Stars. So does that help Atlanta United? Maybe a little bit, probably not in a big way. You just got to deal with Christian Benteke no matter what, and you've got to try to nullify that. You got to make sure that when he wins his aerial duels, that they are not impactful, whether he's winning them and knocking the ball back, and then you're able to close everything down. Heading the ball wide, you're able to close that down and not allow the cross. You got to try to prevent the service into him. Things that Atlanta did not do a good enough job against DC last time they played at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. With a three-team group, you're playing two group stage games in the League's Cup, and two teams from each group go into the knockout round. So it's not a win doesn't guarantee, but it almost does. If you get a win, a regulation win, you're going to be in good shape. Game two is the following Sunday, a week and a couple of days. Atlanta's not going to know what to know, how to deal with a full week plus between games. That's going to be bizarre. Guys are going to develop new hobbies at this rate. So then you get Santos Laguna. Santos Laguna is 16th out of 18 teams in Liga MX in the Apertura. They have not won in their first four games. They've scored one goal in those four games. They've lost three of them. They've lost their last two in a row. That's a game that you're going to be favored to win, and it's a game that you should win. And it's a game that you need to take care of your business in. We saw this last year as Atlanta hosted Cruz Azul after the loss to Miami in game one on the road. And you went to penalties. And if you had won in penalties, you would have advanced into the knockout rounds. You didn't. Getting knockout round games in this kind of competition, and this is no disrespect to the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, and I hate that there are certain segments of whether it is a fan base, a league fan base, the online crowd, the media themselves, I hate that these two competitions are pitted against one another. No, that should not be the case. There should be room for both of these competitions. The Open Cup needs some reforms. There's just no way around it. You had, for example, you had a match in the Open Cup this season in this state that did not take place because a team was not ready to play its games yet. That happened this time around. After all of the talk about how this is all so disrespectful and why would you do this to this tournament? And I love the Open Cup. I've been part of teams that have tried to qualify for the Open Cup multiple times. I've driven players to different states to be part of these competitions, playing two games in a day in some of these competitions to try to qualify. I love the Open Cup. However, it's not perfect, and it needs to be run better, and that's down to U.S. soccer. They're also, on the MLS side, there has to be some give and take with the MLS Players Association about roster rules for the Open Cup. There has to be. Because there should not be any restrictions from players playing in the Open Cup and how that would affect their future participation in MLS games on short-term call-ups. Right now, it does. Not the number of games, but the number of call-ups that you can make. It should not. That needs to change. I understand the MLSPA protecting its members. I get that. If that's the case, then the MLSPA needs to expand its membership to include MLS Next Pro, because those are professional players who are signed to deals. That they're professionals, and they should be represented by that union. And then it makes it a lot easier as players move up and down, right? that needs to get sorted out, because that is one of the major issues on the MLS side, is being able to have guys move back and forth between your second team and your first team for the Open Cup. There shouldn't be restrictions. It should be an opportunity if teams need it to be. Not everyone will, but some will. If they need it to be an opportunity to play their young players, they should have that option. Chelsea does. Manchester City does. Barcelona does. Real Madrid does. Bayern Munich does. All of these clubs that play in their domestic cup competitions in early round games very often use players from their reserve team, from their academies, players who are not featuring for the first teams. That happens. Trust me, that's not just an MLS thing. Don't listen to all of the rhetoric at times. None of that should affect the League's Cup. Yes, it's more games. MLS plays a lighter regular season schedule. One reason why is you can incorporate the League's Cup. Yes, if you are that team, and I don't know if anybody's been that team, and if you're that team and you're that good, more power to you. But if you are that team that can go to a Open Cup final, to a League's Cup final, through the regular season, and to an MLS Cup final, and even playing CONCACAF, if you can get to all those finals, you're incredible, first off, because that doesn't normally happen anywhere in the world, let alone here. Yes, that's a lot of games, and you're going to have to use your entire roster to make that kind of thing happen. What's more likely? What's the most realistic outcome of these things? A team will have to prioritize competitions. The League's Cup is interesting because there's no league games during this period of time. You're not having to prioritize a league match versus a League's Cup match. So it gives you a little bit different feel than some of the other competitions around the world. But do not let your love of tradition with what the Open Cup is. Don't let your love of it. By the way, the Open Cup hasn't had professional teams in it in a regular basis until MLS started in 1996. This isn't the FA Cup in England, where you can go back to 1923 and see who won it, and it's a team that's still around and doing things. You can go back and see who won the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup in 1923. You can. But does it mean anything today? It's very cool for history, and I'm a soccer historian through and through. But it doesn't mean anything about today's competition, where it does in some other countries. Do not let your love of those things affect how you feel about the League's Cup. This is new. That doesn't automatically make it bad. This is exciting. If you watched this tournament last year, it was entertaining. Games went to penalty shootouts after 90 minutes if it was tied. The penalty shootout was for a bonus point. That was incredibly valuable to get out of the group. And you saw some wild shootouts. You saw some wild finishes to games to try to get it to a shootout or avoid a shootout. You saw knockout round games that were amazing. You saw controversy, you saw drama, you saw intensity, you saw great games between two MLS teams, you saw great games between Liga MX teams, you saw great games between members of each league. It was a great competition if you actually watched it. Anybody who tries to tell you otherwise did not pay attention. And look, that's your choice. It's not for me to tell you how to enjoy your soccer. But what I ask of you is not to let narratives and honestly, misinformation keep you from giving this tournament a chance and an opportunity to be entertained by it. I'm looking forward to the third time between Atlanta and DC after they split the first two. I think the game could be a little extra spicy. I'm looking forward to Atlanta and Santos Laguna because I'm always intrigued to see how MLS teams and Liga MX teams match up. You start to look into this tournament a little bit, and we'll get deep into it over the next month as we talk through it. There are some really interesting groups and some interesting group stage matchups. Tigres and Inter Miami in the group stage is going to be a really fun match. Can't wait to see that one. Philly, Charlotte, and Cruz Azul in East 4 is a fascinating group. That one could be very, very interesting. San Jose and the Galaxy are in West 2 along with Chivas. That's going to be a really good group to watch, a really fun watch. I think the most fun group might be West 8, which is Houston, RSL, and Atlas. Atlas is in 6th in Liga MX right now. They've given up a goal a game. They've scored 6. They've won their last 2. Houston and RSL are low-key two of the more fun teams to watch in Major League Soccer this season. Going to be really, really entertaining. I hope you give the tournament an opportunity. I hope you're entertained by it. We're going to have coverage of all of the games that Atlanta United play in here on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app starting on Friday. Kickoff just after 8 o'clock. Pre-game coverage will start at 7. Atlanta in D.C. Round 3 in 2024. Can't wait for it. Hopefully you will join us either in the stadium or on the radio for that. Coming up next, three local stories, four headlines, three things that make me smile about this game that I love so much. It's the 3-4-3 next in 5 on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's time to wrap up tonight's show with the 3-4-3.
3-4-3.
Three local stories, four headlines from around the world, and three things that made you smile about the game.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Time to put a bow on the show. It's time for the 3-4-3 brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. I'm Jason Longshore. Thanks for hanging out with me on another Tuesday night for some AST. Y'all know how this goes by now. It's three local stories that you need to know about, four headlines from anywhere in the world, and three things that make me smile about this game that I love so much. Let's start on the local side. Number one, let's get caught up on Atlanta United 2. They lost on the road Sunday afternoon at Crown Legacy, just outside of Charlotte. Brandon Cambridge, first-team player for Charlotte FC, he had an assist on the opening goal. He scored the second from the penalty spot and ended up making the difference in the 2-1 win for the hosts. Nick Firmino did pull one back to make it 2-1. Cooper Sanchez, the 16-year-old recently signed professional player out of the Atlanta United Academy, he'll join the Atlanta United first-team roster in 2026, so a year and a half with the twos. He is 16 years old. He put Firmino in behind. Firmino stayed with it, riding off a challenge and scoring from the near post at a tough angle. It was a good goal from Firmino, and there were opportunities in it. I thought Atlanta United 2 played better than the scoreline showed. They made some mistakes. They ended up getting punished on the two goals, and the first one was a great counter where Brandon Cambridge just blew past Javier Armas. The second one, Cambridge is looking for the penalty, and he finds it. He collides with Ethan Dudley and ends up putting the ball in the back of the net on the penalty kick. Atlanta United 2 back in action on Saturday night in Huntsville against Huntsville City. You can listen to our call of the match on the SDH Network on Mixlr. I'll share the links ahead of time. And then a week after that, you'll be able to hear Atlanta United 2 soccer on 92.9 The Game next time they're at home in Kennesaw. A little bit later kick. It's an 8:30 kick for that one, but we'll have the call from Fifth Third Stadium in Kennesaw. That's in about a week and a half. Number two on the local side, Atlanta United Academy product, Grant Howard, a player that I really liked. I got to see him play for the U19s in UPSL Georgia's Premier Division. Then he played a lot for Atlanta United too before he started his freshman year at Virginia Tech. He's transferring to Virginia for the upcoming season in college. Howard's played nearly 40 games over his first 2 years in college. He's been a regular at the fullback position, and he's a guy that you might want to keep an eye on as a possible MLS signing when his college eligibility is up. I think he's borderline. He's been a player who kind of maybe caught everybody by surprise, especially with his rise with the U19s. And he did very well in his games with Atlanta United too. Grant Howard, one to watch. He'll be at Virginia in the fall. And number three on the local side, Aiden Torres. He played for the winning East squad in today's MLS Next All-Star game. Really excited to see his continued development with Atlanta United too this season. We've seen him play a little bit higher up the field. I think he is probably a six, although he might be able to play as an eight. And look, in today's game, sixes need to be able to be eights. Eights sometimes need to be able to be tens. Sometimes sixes need to be tens. Sometimes tens need to be sixes. That's all the different kind of roles of central midfielders. You're not going to be a true specialty very often anymore as only a six, only a 10. You're going to have some of the qualities of the other positions. And I think we're starting to see that from Aiden Torres as he gets more and more time at the professional level. Four headlines from around the world. The Olympic soccer competition starts tomorrow. The U.S. men play at 3 o'clock against the host France. We'll see if Caleb Wiley is in the U.S. lineup for that. I wanted to focus on the women's tournament here. We'll talk about the men's tournament maybe a little more in depth next week as we get a little bit better feel for it. That's a U23 competition with 3 overage players on the rosters. The women's competition is full senior national teams. And the U.S. goes into this with a lot of eyeballs on them. This is Emma Hayes' first competition in charge of the U.S. women's national team. And she made it clear that the idea that the U.S. women, like what they're going to do when they get to a semifinal and what they're going to do when they get to a final and these things being taken for granted, that's not the case anymore. That idea has to change. We've talked about this a lot with the U.S. men over the past month or so about expectations not matching reality. It's that way for the U.S. women as well. You can't just show up with the U.S. badge on the front of your shirt and expect to win every time anymore. There are better teams. There are teams that are just as good in different ways as this U.S. women's team. Doesn't mean they can't win, but the days of just walking in the door and winning, that's not the reality anymore. They've got 4 Olympic gold medals, more than anybody else, but they have not won gold since 2012. 2016, they were knocked out in the quarterfinals. They earned a bronze last time out in Tokyo. They play Zambia on Thursday in Group B. Germany and Australia are also in the group, a very difficult group. Hayes called Zambia captain Barbara Banda the most informed striker on earth right now. She's killing it in the NWSL. The favorite of the Olympic women's tournament is Spain. They are the defending World Cup champions. They won that last year. This is their first Olympics, by the way. They're led by Ballon d'Or winner Aitana Bonmatí, one of the most talented players in the world. You also have Alexia Putellas, Jennifer Hermoso, Irene Paredes. This is an incredibly talented team with young players breaking through, but also tons of experience. France is also very, very good. Wendy Renard, she's going to be the captain. 8 times Champions League winner, Wendy Renard. But in the run-up to this tournament, their form's been all over the place. Harvey Renard, who I've mentioned as someone that U.S. soccer needs to talk to about their men's coaching vacancy, this is his last tournament with the French women before he steps down and then could be available. So I don't know. Maybe people want to have a conversation with him. We'll see. We'll see how they do in this tournament. Also making the news on the Olympic women's soccer tournament, the New Zealand women's team were allegedly spied on via a drone ahead of their opening match. The drone operator was identified as a support staff member of the wider Canadian women's football squad. That drone operator was detained by police in France. This happened at the New Zealand training session on Monday. These teams play on Friday. There's going to be a lot more to come on this one. We've got the Canadian women's team flying drones to try to spy on New Zealand. Welcome to the Olympics. Number 2 on the headlines, Javier Aguirre, the new head coach for Mexico as they've moved on from Jaime Lozano. Rafa Márquez, 5 World Cups as a player, had been coaching Barcelona B team. He will be groomed by Aguirre to become the national team manager for the next World Cup cycle. So he will be an assistant for Aguirre under the next 2 seasons. We'll see. I feel like each time Javier Aguirre has come back to be in charge of Mexico, the results have been less. This feels like a shot in the dark here. I don't know. Rafa Márquez as the next one up is interesting. That's a different component to it. But I don't think this move really excites anybody when it comes to Mexico. And I don't think it's about the coach. I think it's about the quality of the players. Number 3 on the headlines, Hansi Flick, the new head coach of Barcelona. He said that, look, he gets it in terms of how Barcelona plays with their passing style, but he wants the team to be more direct. He said, here the tradition is to play with passing, but I also want them to go straight to the goal. They should focus a bit more on scoring. I don't think my style has any major changes. I'm looking for the same thing, to press high up and to play in the opponent's midfield, but at the end of the day, everything is about winning games. Yes, everything is about winning games and winning trophies. However, just to dismiss the style of play in Barcelona, Hansi Flick better win a lot. Tata Martino didn't dismiss the style of play. just maybe altered it a little bit during his year. And they were very, very good, but they didn't win any trophies, and he didn't have a second year. So Hansi Flick better win a lot, talking like that straight out of the gate. Number four on the headlines, a match in the Norwegian First Division between Rosenborg and Lillestrøm was suspended on Sunday after fans showed their anger about the video assistant referee system by throwing fish cakes on the field. Yeah, that happened. The protests, they started at kickoff. So this is just about the idea of video assistant referees. They, for 2 minutes, threw fish cakes on the field. The referee stopped the match, sent the players to the dressing room. They come back out. They restart the game. Protests intensified. They ran out of fish cakes, so they threw tennis balls. They threw smoke bombs on the field. The referee eventually, 30 minutes in, said, I'm out of here. We're done. It's scoreless. I'm leaving. VAR in Norway has gotten people all riled up. Several club supporters unions are claiming that it's a bad thing. It ruins matches. Sweden decided not to implement VAR. I'm going to get back on that soapbox that I pulled out to talk about the Open Cup and Leagues Cup for a second. Video assistant referees, the idea of them is very, very good. We want calls to be correct, don't we? The idea of what the video assistant referee does is very, very good. There has been far more good than bad about what video assistant referees at. They get calls right. They get more calls right. How many times have we seen over the years since VAR came in, an assistant referee put their flag up after the play is over saying that player was offside? In the past, no goal. How many times have we seen that review come back and say, oh, nope, they were actually onside. That's a good goal. Has there been instances where video assistant referees have got things wrong? 100%. We've seen it. It happens. Have there been instances over the years where we've seen referees and assistant referees get things wrong? Yes. We're getting more right now. Do you need to train them better? Yes. Do you need to make the process quicker? Yes. Do you need to, at times, limit the usage of it because people are trying to re-referee games with it? Yes. But the idea of it, to protest the idea of it? Sorry, that's foolishness. And that's something where, at times, us soccer fans who get super passionate about this stuff, we can be our own worst enemy because we never want to change anything to try to make it better. We need to try to make it better. There are things that need to be made better. Video assistant referees are part of that process. After fish cake throwing, let's get to three things that make me smile about the game. Number one, on the men's Olympic side of things, we've got a new team from CONCACAF who has qualified. The Dominican Republic, they shocked a bunch of teams. They helped eliminate Mexico. Mexico is expected to be in this tournament. The qualifying happened at the CONCACAF U20s last time around. Dominican Republic shocked everybody. This is their debut. They're going to play Egypt. They're going to play Spain. They're going to play Uzbekistan. Massive for the development of the game in the Dominican Republic. Number two, I talked about it off the top of the show, the MLS Skills Challenge. Liga MX won it. This was a blast. I mean, seeing the quality of guys like Sergio Busquets just looks effortless with him in some of these things. Ricky Puig, one of the most talented players in the league. He broke Thiago Almada's record on the passing game. Just fun, fun, fun to watch. I know it's not, you know, traditional, and I know that there might be fish cakes thrown on the field in some countries if you try to do these things, but it's fun. I want them to expand it. I want them to have an NWSL team that participates in this. I want them to have a Legends team that participates in this with the old guys talking smack to the young guys. I want to see this expand. I want there to be more of it because it is fun. MLS has a potential jewel on their hands with the Skills Challenge, and I hope they maximize it. And number three, Caleb Wiley. Just the trajectory of his career to go back and look at his debut in 2020 during the pandemic on the road in Tampa Bay to now, and to see what he has turned into, not just as a soccer player, but as a human being. He's a good person, and he's become a leader. And more importantly, he is an inspiration to kids in Atlanta now. As the long time ago that I was a kid in Atlanta playing soccer. But these kinds of heroes and inspirations didn't exist then. You didn't have anybody to look up to. You didn't have anybody that you could say, I watched them play as a professional at 17 years old. I watched them boss a game at 19. And now I watched them get to live out a dream and go to one of the biggest clubs in the world. Yeah, he's going to start at Strasbourg. That's okay. That's a good spot for him. But Caleb Wiley and his development and what Atlanta United coaches and what his family and all of that has done has changed the paradigm of what kids can believe that they can be as soccer players in this region now. And it's amazing. And we're going to see it in about 10 years. We're going to see more kids that stick with the game, that get into the game because they want to be the next Caleb Wiley. So big time congrats to Caleb and his family and every coach who helped to develop him to this point. Every single one, because they all had a hand in it. It's been amazing to watch. Thank you for hanging out with me tonight. We're back Friday. Leagues Cup opener at the Benz, Atlanta in D.C. Five Stripes countdown starts at 7. Kickoff set for just after 8. Full-time report after the final whistle to break everything down. And then AST will be back next Tuesday at 10 p.m. to talk about Leagues Cup and where everything stands. Adios, everybody.
It's time to wrap up tonight's show with the 3-4-3.
3-4-3.
Three local stories, four headlines from around the world, and three things that made you smile about the game.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Time to put a bow on the show. It's time for the 3-4-3, brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. I'm Jason Longshore. Thanks for hanging out with me on another Tuesday night for some AST. Y'all know how this goes by now. It's three local stories that you need to know about, four headlines from anywhere in the world, and three things that make me smile about this game that I love so much. Let's start on the local side. Number one, let's get caught up on Atlanta United 2. They lost on the road Sunday afternoon at Crown Legacy, just outside of Charlotte. Brandon Cambridge, first team player for Charlotte FC. He had an assist on the opening goal. He scored the second from the penalty spot and ended up making the difference in the 2-1 win for the hosts. Nick Firmino did pull one back to make it 2-1. Cooper Sanchez, the 16-year-old recently signed professional player out of the Atlanta United Academy, he'll join the Atlanta United first team roster in 2026. So a year and a half with the twos. He is 16 years old. He put Firmino in behind. Firmino stayed with it, riding off a challenge and scoring from the near post at a tough angle. It was a good goal from Firmino, and there were opportunities in it. I thought Atlanta United 2 played better than the scoreline showed. They made some mistakes. They ended up getting punished on the two goals, and the first one was a great counter where Brandon Cambridge just blew past Javier Armas. The second one, Cambridge is looking for the penalty and he finds it. He collides with Ethan Dudley and ends up putting the ball in the back of the net on the penalty kick. Atlanta United 2 back in action on Saturday night in Huntsville against Huntsville City. You can listen to our call of the match on the SDH network on Mixlr. I'll share the links ahead of time. And then a week after that, you'll be able to hear Atlanta United 2 soccer on 92.9 The Game. Next time they're at home in Kennesaw. A little bit later kick. It's an 8:30 kick for that one. But we'll have the call from Fifth Third Stadium in Kennesaw. That's in about a week and a half. Number two on the local side, Atlanta United Academy product, Grant Howard, a player that I really like because I got to see him play for the U19s in UPSL Georgia's Premier Division. Then he played a lot for Atlanta United too before he started his freshman year at Virginia Tech. He's transferring to Virginia for the upcoming season in college. Howard's played nearly 40 games over his first 2 years in college. He's been a regular at the fullback position, and he's a guy that you might want to keep an eye on as a possible MLS signing when his college eligibility is up. I think he's borderline. He's been a player who kind of maybe caught everybody by surprise, especially with his rise with the U19s. And he did very well in his games with Atlanta United too. Grant Howard, one to watch. He'll be at Virginia in the fall. And number three on the local side, Aiden Torres. He played for the winning East squad in today's MLS Next All-Star game. Really excited to see his continued development with Atlanta United too this season. We've seen him play a little bit higher up the field. I think he is probably a six, although he might be able to play as an eight. And look, in today's game, Sixes need to be able to be eights. Eights sometimes need to be able to be tens. Sometimes sixes need to be tens. Sometimes tens need to be sixes. That's all the different kind of roles of central midfielders. You're not going to be a true specialty very often anymore as only a six, only a 10. You're going to have some of the qualities of the other positions. And I think we're starting to see that from Aiden Torres as he gets more and more time at the professional level. Four headlines from around the world. The Olympic soccer competition starts tomorrow. The U.S. men play at 3 o'clock against the host France. We'll see if Caleb Wiley is in the U.S. lineup for that. I wanted to focus on the women's tournament here. We'll talk about the men's tournament maybe a little more in depth next week as we get a little bit better feel for it. That's a U23 competition with three overage players on the rosters. The women's competition is full senior national teams. And the U.S. goes into this with a lot of eyeballs on them. This is Emma Hayes' first competition in charge of the U.S. women's national team. And she made it clear that the idea that the U.S. women, like what they're going to do when they get to a semifinal and what they're going to do when they get to a final and these things being taken for granted, that's not the case anymore. That idea has to change. We've talked about this a lot with the U.S. men over the past month or so about expectations not matching reality. It's that way for the U.S. women as well. You can't just show up with the U.S. badge on the front of your shirt and expect to win every time anymore. There are better teams. There are teams that are just as good in different ways as this U.S. women's team. Doesn't mean they can't win, but the days of just walking in the door and winning, that's not the reality anymore. They've got four Olympic gold medals, more than anybody else, but they have not won gold since 2012. 2016, they were knocked out in the quarterfinals. They earned a bronze last time out in Tokyo. They play Zambia on Thursday in Group B. Germany and Australia are also in the group, a very difficult group. Hayes called Zambia captain Barbara Banda the most informed striker on earth right now. She's killing it in the NWSL. The favorite of the Olympic women's tournament is Spain. They are the defending World Cup champions. They won that last year. This is their first Olympics, by the way. They're led by Ballon d'Or winner Aitana Bonmatí, one of the most talented players in the world. You also have Alexia Putellas, Jennifer Hermoso, Irene Paredes. This is an incredibly talented team with young players breaking through, but also tons of experience. France is also very, very good. Wendy Renard, she's going to be the captain. 8 times Champions League winner, Wendy Renard. But in the run-up to this tournament, their form's been all over the place. Harve Renard, who I've mentioned as someone that U.S. soccer needs to talk to about their men's coaching vacancy, this is his last tournament with the French women before he steps down and then could be available. So I don't know. Maybe people want to have a conversation with him. We'll see. We'll see how they do in this tournament. Also making the news on the Olympic women's soccer tournament, the New Zealand women's team were allegedly spied on via a drone ahead of their opening match. The drone operator was identified as a support staff member of the wider Canadian women's football squad. That drone operator was detained by police in France. This happened at the New Zealand training session on Monday. These teams play on Friday. There's going to be a lot more to come on this one. We've got the Canadian women's team flying drones to try to spy on New Zealand. Welcome to the Olympics. Number two on the headlines, Javier Aguirre, the new head coach for Mexico as they've moved on from Jaime Lozano. Rafa Márquez, 5 World Cups as a player, had been coaching Barcelona B team. He will be groomed by Aguirre to become the national team manager for the next World Cup cycle. So he will be an assistant for Aguirre under the next 2 seasons. We'll see. I feel like each time Javier Aguirre has come back to be in charge of Mexico, the results have been less. This feels like a shot in the dark here. I don't know. Rafa Márquez as the next one up is interesting. That's a different component to it. But I don't think this move really excites anybody when it comes to Mexico. And I don't think it's about the coach. I think it's about the quality of the players. Number three on the headlines, Hansi Flick, the new head coach of Barcelona. He said that, look, he gets it in terms of how Barcelona plays with their passing style, but he wants the team to be more direct. He said, here the tradition is to play with passing, but I also want them to go straight to the goal. They should focus a bit more on scoring. I don't think my style has any major changes. I'm looking for the same thing, to press high up and to play in the opponent's midfield. But at the end of the day, everything is about winning games. Yes, everything is about winning games and winning trophies. However, just to dismiss the style of play in Barcelona, Hansi Flick better win a lot. Tata Martino didn't dismiss the style of play, just maybe altered it a little bit during his year. And they were very, very good, but they didn't win any trophies, and he didn't have a second year. So Hansi Flick better win a lot, talking like that straight out of the gate. Number four on the headlines, a match in the Norwegian First Division between Rosenborg and Lillestrøm was suspended on Sunday after fans showed their anger about the video assistant referee system by throwing fish cakes on the field. Yeah, that happened. The protests, they started at kickoff. So this is just about the idea of video assistant referees. They, for 2 minutes, threw fish cakes on the field. The referee stopped the match, sent the players to the dressing room. They come back out. They restart the game. Protests intensified. They ran out of fish cakes, so they threw tennis balls. They threw smoke bombs on the field. The referee eventually, 30 minutes in, said, I'm out of here. We're done. It's scoreless. I'm leaving. VAR in Norway has gotten people all riled up. Several club supporters unions are claiming that it's a bad thing. It ruins matches. Sweden decided not to implement VAR. I'm going to get back on that soapbox that I pulled out to talk about the Open Cup and Leagues Cup for a second. Video assistant referees, the idea of them is very, very good. We want calls to be correct, don't we? The idea of what the video assistant referee does is very, very good. There has been far more good than bad about what video assistant referees add. They get calls right. They get more calls right. How many times have we seen over the years since VAR came in, an assistant referee put their flag up after the play is over saying that player was offside? In the past, no goal. How many times have we seen that review come back and say, oh, no, they were actually onside. That's a good goal. Has there been instances where video assistant referees have got things wrong? 100%. We've seen it. It happens. Have there been instances over the years where we've seen referees and assistant referees get things wrong? Yes. We're getting more right now. Do you need to train them better? Yes. Do you need to make the process quicker? Yes. Do you need to, at times, limit the usage of it because people are trying to re-referee games with it? Yes. But the idea of it, to protest the idea of it, sorry, that's foolishness. And that's something where at times us soccer fans who get super passionate about this stuff, we can be our own worst enemy because we never want to change anything to try to make it better. We need to try to make it better. There are things that need to be made better. Video assistant referees are part of that process. After fish cake throwing, let's get to three things that make me smile about the game. Number one, on the men's Olympic side of things, we've got a new team from CONCACAF who has qualified. The Dominican Republic, they shocked a bunch of teams. They helped eliminate Mexico. Mexico is expected to be in this tournament. The qualifying happened at the CONCACAF U-20s last time around. Dominican Republic shocked everybody. This is their debut. They're going to play Egypt. They're going to play Spain. They're going to play Uzbekistan. Massive for the development of the game in the Dominican Republic. Number two, I talked about it off the top of the show, the MLS Skills Challenge. Liga MX won it. This was a blast. I mean, seeing the quality of guys like Sergio Busquets, just looks effortless with him in some of these things. Ricky Puch, one of the most talented players in the league. He broke Thiago Almada's record on the passing game. Just fun to watch. I know it's not, you know, traditional, and I know that there might be fish cakes thrown on the field in some countries if you try to do these things, but it's fun. I want them to expand it. I want them to have an NWSL team that participates in this. I want them to have a Legends team that participates in this with the old guys talking smack to the young guys. I want to see this expand. I want there to be more of it because it is fun. MLS has a potential jewel on their hands with the Skills Challenge, and I hope they maximize it. And number three, Caleb Wiley. Just the trajectory of his career, to go back and look at his debut in 2020 during the pandemic on the road in Tampa Bay to now. and to see what he has turned into, not just as a soccer player, but as a human being. He's a good person, and he's become a leader. And more importantly, he is an inspiration to kids in Atlanta now. As the long time ago that I was a kid in Atlanta playing soccer. But these kinds of heroes and inspirations didn't exist then. You didn't have anybody to look up to. You didn't have anybody that you could say, I watched them play as a professional at 17 years old. I watched them boss a game at 19. And now I watched them get to live out a dream and go to one of the biggest clubs in the world. Yeah, he's going to start at Strasbourg. That's okay. That's a good spot for him. But Caleb Wiley and his development and what Atlanta United coaches and what his family and all of that has done has changed the paradigm of what kids can believe that they can be as soccer players in this region now. And it's amazing. And we're going to see it in about 10 years. We're going to see more kids that stick with the game, that get into the game because they want to be the next Caleb Wiley. So big time congrats to Caleb and his family and every coach who helped to develop him to this point. Every single one, because they all had a hand in it. It's been amazing to watch. Thank you for hanging out with me tonight. We're back Friday. Leagues Cup opener at the Benz, Atlanta and DC. Five Stripes countdown starts at 7. Kickoff set for just after 8. Full-time report after the final whistle to break everything down. And then AST will be back next Tuesday at 10 p.m. to talk about Leagues Cup and where everything stands. Adios, everybody.